Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, February 8, 2022. Sudanese authorities detain a journalist working for the British Broadcasting Corporation in Khartoum.
وهما مركزين على الإعلام لأنه الإعلام بيحكي ماذا رأي عام بيحكي في الصورة عشان كده مستهدفة الرجال.
They came in a numberless vehicle and they were armed while they were dressed in civilian clothes. After some discussions, they decided to arrest the three foreign journalists and allow the Sudanese to go.
And South Sudan's Minister for Peace Building says the country has weapons for graduating the unified forces.
I believe we don't have shortage of weapons to unify our forces. We don't have to buy new weapons. We can graduate them with what we have already. We don't have shortage of weapons in this country. If anything, we have excess of them, and they are everywhere in wrong hands.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese authorities detained a group of journalists from the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, in Khartoum on Monday. The Sudanese Journalist Network condemned the incident, saying the detentions violates press freedom in the country. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
An eyewitness who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals from the security forces says a group of Sudanese armed men stopped a vehicle hired by a group of the BBC media crew on the way, arrested three foreign journalists and drove them away. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum earlier today, the eyewitness said three other Sudanese journalists who were with the group were not arrested.
They are focusing on the media because it is a public opinion which reflects the reality on the ground. That is why they are targeting freedom of expression with so much excessive force.
She says they came in a numberless vehicle and they were armed while they were dressed in civilian clothes. After some discussions, the eyewitness says they decided to arrest the three foreign journalists and allow the Sudanese to go. We tried to convince them that we are one team, but they refuse, the eyewitness says. A reliable source from the BBC office in Khartoum says the three foreign journalists arrived Khartoum from London a few days ago. Following yesterday's arrest, the three were held at a police station in Khartoum West, questioned for about 2 hours and released. The source declined to reveal the nationalities of the detained journalists. The Sudanese Journalist Network condemned the incident. Aisha Assamani, an executive member of the network, who is also the editor-in-chief of the electronic Medania News, describes it as an attack on media freedom in Sudan. Assamani says the network has recorded more than 10 direct attacks on journalists and media houses since October 25th military coup. She says such incidents violate press freedom and hinder the democratic transformation and development of the country.
They came in a numberless vehicle and they were armed while they were dressed in civilian clothes. After some discussions, they decided to arrest the three foreign journalists and allow the Sudanese to go.
As Samani says, they are focusing on the media because it is a public opinion which reflects the reality on the ground. That is why, she says, they are targeting freedom of speech with so much excessive force. Majority of our journalists now are fearing. Most of them remain anonymous due to the danger of the situation, as Samani says. In December 2021, Sudanese security forces stormed the offices of Al Arabiya, Al Hadaz and Al Sharq TV channels and assaulted the channel's staff, including reporters, journalists and support workers, destroyed broadcasting equipment and lobbed tear gas inside their offices. Security forces also detained Al Sharq correspondents Mahal Tilib and Sally Osman for hours before releasing them. Authorities also confiscated the broadcast license of Al Jazeera Mubashir or Live and asked for the closure of their office in Khartoum. As Samani says, the incidents are a clear violation of media freedom in Sudan. something she says hinders the democratic transition in the country. She is calling for an immediate investigation into the attacks, saying Sudanese authorities should stop attacking media and journalists.
الإعلام جزء أساسي من عملية الانتقال الديمقراطي حيكون أساسي في موضوع السلام.
The media is an essential part of the democratic transformation. It plays an important role in peace building, freedoms and development. So the media is an important tool towards nation building. We cannot have a democratic state without a free media.
Asamani says the media is an essential part of the democratic transformation. It plays an important role in the peace building, freedoms and development. She says the media is an important tool towards nation building. We cannot have a democratic state without a free media, Asamani says. Pro-democracy protesters have continued to reject the October 25th military coup and are demanding the establishment of a civilian-led government in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, or SPLA-IO, rival factions clashed in Upper Nile over the weekend. A spokesperson of the SPLM-IO faction, allied to first Vice President Riek Machar, alleges the SPLA-IO Kitgwang faction attacked their positions. A spokesperson of the Kitgwang faction confirms the two groups clashed and says fighting is still going on. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, the spokesperson of the SPLA-IO faction led by Riek Machar, accuses the Kitgwang faction of attacking his group in Nasir and Mathiang over the weekend.
2 days ago, our forces and our location was attacked around Nasir by elements of all people who are loyal to the Kitgwang declaration. And also it happened yesterday in Mathiang. We were also attacked by Korchol, the forces of Korchol. You know, General Korchol defected from the SLO and went straight to the SSPDF. So he attacked us in Mathiang, and we were able to push him back to his territory, causing a lot of displacement at the moment. And of course, we know lives are lost.
Colonel Gabriel says Machar faction is committed to the implementation of the 2018 revitalized peace agreement, but says if it is attacked, it will fight back.
Anyone attack us will continue defending ourselves and will also defend the agreement itself. Regardless of the defection, regardless of the clashes that have been happening, regardless of the aggression and the violation that is taking place against the SPLA-IO, we are always committed to the implementation because it is not our agenda as the SPLA-IO, but South Sudanese in general wants peace at the moment.
Brigadier General Chuol Dengthon, the spokesperson of the Kitgwang faction, confirms the clashes took place on Sunday, but says the Machar factions attacked the Kitgwang group and killed three of its soldiers.
في طبعا في مدينة ناصر في مغ في منطقة تركيا برفض فكرة اشتباكات ما بين قواتنا وقوات المتحالف مارك مشار.
There has been fighting between SPLM-IO and Kitgwang in Nasir town at a place called Turkai. And before the fighting started, it was the forces of Riek Machar who attacked our positions. Turkai is our position, as the Kitgwang. We have lost three people and six wounded.
Thorn says the fighting is ongoing. In August last year, General Simon Gadwich Dual, the former chief of general staff of the SPLA-IO, said he had ousted Machar as leader of the SPLM-AIO and declared himself interim chairman of the movement. Machar rejected the move and called on his supporters to respect the terms of the 2018 revitalized peace agreement. The Kitgwang faction signed a peace deal with the SPLM in government in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Peace monitors in South Sudan have been expressing concern over the stalled implementation of the peace deal, especially security arrangements. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
South Sudan's Minister for Peace Building says the arms embargo imposed on South Sudan by the United Nations Security Council does not prevent the government from graduating the unified forces. Stephen Parkwal says political will is required by parties to the agreement to fully implement the deal. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
Parkwal says there are enough guns in the hands of the SPLM in opposition to graduate the joint unified forces.
With the weapon we have on both sides, and I can speak about the SPLA-IO side and the government side, I believe we don't have shortage of weapons to unify our forces. We don't have to buy new weapons. We can graduate them with what we have already. We don't have shortage of weapons in this country. If anything, we have excess of them, and they are everywhere in wrong hands.
The Minister of Peace Building says the principal parties to the revitalized peace agreement are all armed organizations with plenty of weapons to graduate the forces. He says the next project should be unifying the forces and instructing them to disarm civilians across the country. Kual says all that's required to unify forces is political will from the signatories of the 2018 revitalized peace agreement.
The one in the barracks now and the one in the cantonment can be taken to the training camps with not much logistical resources that you need there. The one we have now in the training camps ready for graduation do not also need a lot of money for graduation. I think the political will is what required even for unification of forces and unification of the command, the structures.
Kual says implementing the security arrangements in Chapter 2 of the agreement is long due and should have been accomplished before Chapter 1, which provides for the formation of the Revitalized Transitional Government of National Unity, or RTGUNO. He said the order of business in implementing the deal provides that the security sharing is carried out before power sharing. To expedite the process, Kual says the parties must quickly unify the command structures and graduate the unified and jointly trained forces.
The forces in 17 training centers have been ready for the last 2 years and must be graduated and jointly deployed. The continuum, as is stipulated in the RRQs, must end with complete unification of two forces, the forces of SPLA-IO, the forces of SAWA, and the SSPDF. We must merge them into one united national force.
Last month, John Aganyi, the chairperson of the Information Committee in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, told South Sudan in Focus in an exclusive interview on January 12 that the arms embargo imposed on South Sudan by the international community caused the delay in graduating the joint forces.
In the process of the agreement, it was been said that the forces are to be contained. They have to go to the contained areas. There they are trained, they are screened, and then they are actually graduated at the end and they fulfill their duty, their national duty that they were being trained for. But if you tell me that you are not going to allow them to be armed, how can a soldier work without a gun? And where do you expect us to get gun from? So I think the international community, they are also giving us our time to implement peace.
Kual says most of the progress carried out so far has been on Chapter 1, which provides for the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity and Responsibility Sharing. He said the Transitional National Legislative Assembly and the State Legislative Assemblies have been formed, but the government is still working on forming national and state commissions.
The hurdles, the challenges are there, and these are things we have to expect in a peace process like ours, resolving a conflict of 7 years, civil war, that has devastated everything, including the social fabric of the society. The war has also devastated our economy. We must maintain this peace to remain on track, to end this conflict, end the suffering of the people of South Sudan, and embark on reconciliations and healing.
Kual says the government must end the suffering of the people of South Sudan and embark on reconciliation and healing. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is coffee contributing to climate change? Stay tuned for that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today
Is there something about yourself that you would like to change?
Definitely not. No, because at least I know my life has been good. I've not been entertaining bad company. So to maybe to change my life, I need to start making at least new friends again.
Life is all about learning. We learn every day. So in as much as we are still breathing, there are things we need to shed off.
Currently, I would like to change my tummy. I'm growing a pot belly. So I'm exercising. I've bought an abdomen machine that's helping me to deal with it. And I want to lose weight, probably 5-8 kilos.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at coffee and climate change. Millions of people around the world enjoy drinking coffee, but the daily caffeine fix could be under threat because climate change is killing coffee plants. As Henry Ridgewell reports, scientists in London are working with farmers in Africa to find a solution.
Outside the vast glass houses at London's Kew Botanic Gardens, the temperature is below freezing. Inside, the heat and humidity replicate a tropical jungle. Aaron Davis leads Kew's research into coffee.
This is Arabica coffee, our preferred coffee, the one we drink in high streets and at home. It has a superior taste. And this coffee provides us with about 60% of the coffee that we drink globally. The other species over here is Robusta coffee. So this has a slightly larger leaf. This coffee provides us with the other 40% of the world's coffee supply.
The cultivation of Arabica and Robusta coffee beans supports millions of livelihoods across Africa, South America and Asia, but they're under threat because of climate change.
In some cases, yields are dramatically reduced because of increased temperatures or reduced rainfall. But in some cases, as we've seen in Ethiopia, you might get a complete harvest failure and death of the trees.
The solution could be growing deep in the forests of West Africa. There are around 130 species of coffee plant, but not all taste good. In Sierra Leone, Davis and his team identified one candidate growing in the wild, Stenophylla.
And this is extremely heat tolerant and is an interesting species because it matches Arabica in terms of its superb taste.
A further two coffee species also show promise for commercial cultivation in a changing climate, Liberica and Eugeniades.
That has low yields and very small beans, but it has an amazing taste.
Some believe the taste is far superior. At the 2021 World Barista Championships in Milan, Australia's Hugh Kelly won third prize with his Eugeniades espresso. The team at Kew Botanic Gardens is working with farmers in Africa on cultivating the new coffees commercially. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
From London, we move back to Juba, where officials from Central Equatorial State say they will work to tackle challenges facing the state. Speaking while inaugurating the revitalized Central Equatorial State Legislative Assembly, the governor and newly sworn-in Legislative Assembly Speaker say the parliament and the executive branch will work together to address insecurity caused by conflict between cattle keepers and farmers. The officials also pledged to address land grabbing in Central Equatorial State. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Lawmakers in the Central Equatorial State Transitional Legislative Assembly representing different parties to the peace deal take the oath of office in Juba today. The event marked the reconstitution of the oversight arm of the state government that has been missing since formation of the state government nearly a year ago. Central Equatorial State Governor Emmanuel Adel describes the inauguration as a relief and marks a giant step forward in promoting multi-party politics and tenets of democratic governance in the state. Adel urged lawmakers to join hands with the executive and address critical challenges that make lives of ordinary citizens miserable. He cited insecurity caused by the activities of Nas rebels, land grabs, and cattle movements are some of the many challenges requiring immediate attention.
There is a huge threat of land malpractice throughout our state, particularly in Juba City and Juba County. The threat is all about land grabbing, as intensified by perpetrators who grab lands from disadvantaged people for personal businesses or commercial purposes. Hence, it has contributed to insecurity.
Adil says the roaming of cattle from Jonglei State and Terkeka County among farming communities in Juba, Kajukeji, and Elanya counties has inflamed tensions, led to fighting and displaced citizens, leading to acute food insecurity. He also said there is an acute shortage of basic services, which the governor says is enshrined in the Central Equatoria State Development Plan. They include peace building, economic recovery through agriculture and investment, and access to justice. Adil says in order for state leaders to meet the aspirations of citizens, members of the executive and legislative assembly should leave behind their past differences and work as one team.
I urge the honorable members to embrace the spirit of working together as a team, minimize party-related differences to avoid negative consequences on our people. As you exercise your mandate, ensure that the will of the people prevails over your party affiliations, and strive to drive your decisions collectively and individually to achieve the vision of a united, peaceful, and prosperous state through the motto, People First.
And Adil reminded the lawmakers of the state government's top priority.
I would want to emphasize to all the parties that our mandate shall be to collectively implement the River Talaiz Peace Agreement to rebuild hope and confidence, reconcile our citizens to live in harmony, improve on the delivery of services, and prepare our citizens for the forthcoming elections at the end of the interim period.
Peter Wani Elias, Speaker of the Central Equatoria State Transitional Legislative Assembly, says he will ensure that lawmakers play their oversight role of promoting democracy, the rule of law, and transparency in government.
In tandem with the other arms of the government, we will strive to ensure that these pillars of good governance are instituted so as to safeguard, nurture, and robust and respective leadership, rather than creating a weak and helpless government.
Earlier, a member of the SPLM-IO party was sworn in Tuesday morning, along with several other lawmakers appointed from the various parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement. The inauguration was long overdue, as required by the revitalized peace deal. Central Equatoria State is among a handful of states that have so far inaugurated their legislative assemblies and have an oversight body to monitor the activities of the executive to ensure transparency, accountability, and good governance. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
One of South Sudan's female football referees says she's often bullied and discriminated against by her male counterparts. 18-year-old Nyan Rek Mawer claims she's the only female referee in Twitch County of Warab State. For VOA News, Dialo Elias has the story from Juba.
Nyariak Mawir grew up in a family of male footballers and has always been passionate about the game, but she says it has been difficult to become a referee in a community where soccer is for men only. Mawir says she was inspired by European female footballers after watching them on television and hoped to become like them one day. Mawir tells South Sudan in Focus she ignores negative comments when she is on the football field. People usually tell me that women are not supposed to play football. Some families even stop their children from playing football. Others say, why would they allow their daughters to go and open their legs in the field? For me, I am with the boys, then I am a boy, but at home I am a girl and do all the house chores. That is why my family always allows me to go. despite the negative comments Mawir says, with support and encouragement from a few individuals in the community, she was able to overcome the challenges and focus more on her goals of becoming an international referee. Mawir says, besides herself, there are only three other female referees in Tonch and Kwajok. She is appealing to parents across the country and in Twitch Mayardit in particular to allow their daughters and sisters to engage in sport activities.
In 2021, I went to Juba and did some training, then came to Awil, where I found more than 10 girls.
49-year-old Adele Daniel, who started her work as a female referee in the early 20s, says she too faced many challenges. Daniel says it was more difficult to be a female referee during her time because back then society was not sensitized on gender equality at all. Daniel says her male colleagues often made fun of her and bullied her.
Whenever I entered the field with shorts, they were not comfortable. They called me names and said, "What kind of woman wears that? Why is a married woman dressed like this?" and so many things. But for me, I believed they wanted to discourage me from my passion.
Mabior Mayot is a male football referee in Juba. He says in years past, male referees like himself tended not to consider female referees professionals. Mayot says discrimination still exists against female referees in villages across the country because of cultural traditions towards girls.
In Juba, seeing female referees is something normal, but to others it is not right for women to become referees. In the Juba Football Association, there are female referees that we got trained together as referees. So seeing female referees to us is normal, but to the male referees in the States, this is something difficult for them to accept because the cultural norms in the villages, it is more difficult to an extent that some family members do not allow their female children play football.
Mayot encourages his colleagues in the States to stop intimidating female soccer players and instead offer them support so they can improve their skills and move on to the international arena. Last month, three women referees made history by taking part in the African Nation Championship quarterfinal. The female referees were Ethiopian Lydia Tafis, assisted by Malawian Bernadetta Kwembira and Nigerian Mimicent Ihore. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end the show with Victoria Ole and the song "Oh Mama." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Mafi, kulu haja, mafi, 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 kulu haja, mafi.